very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are down, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey, everybody, Tim Kawakami here, 49ers Plus Minus, with my co-host, Matt Barros of The Athletic. He wanted to postpone this recording until after the finish of the Packers-Dallas game, but this thing could go on forever. So we're recording this as overtime is happening. I like to go to sleep before 1 a.m. So we will monitor it. We'll kind of be any of us take a sideways glance on the video. You know, we're taking a look at the score, but I don't know. It's a coin flip game at this point. It's overtime. So Barros, focus on this. This is the podcast you're getting paid for. So all dedication to this podcast, not to that football game. 49ers lose. First loss of the season earlier today at Levi's Stadium, 26-21, the Jacksonville Jaguars. That is a familiar score, Barros. Do you know what that score was, 26-21?
Was that the score of the Seattle game?
No. The most famous – no, that was lower, I think. The most famous one, Super Bowl 16. 49ers first Super Bowl victory over the Bengals, 26-21.
The Ken Anderson led Bengals.
Yeah. Ken Anderson led Bengals, and it was a guy named Joe Montana, I seem to recall. So those scores will always remember. I'll always remember them because that was the first big Super Bowl of my sporting lifetime. So that is frozen in my memory. This was less than that of a classic game. As Trent Williams was pointing out, the 49ers did gain 400 yards. They didn't look like it. It was just turnover, turnover, turnover. As Shanahan pointed out, they only punted twice. It just was a very herky-jerk thing because they kept turning it over. Two interceptions by Brock Purdy, one fumble, and then one sack fumble that ended it. Forced by the great Eric Armstead. Turnovers obviously were the main topic. And we could also get into the Robert Saleh, Liam Cohen,
yeah,
back and forth after the game. But first, just your thoughts on kind of, you know, it seems too easy just to say turnovers because there's things that led to the turnovers. There's fragilities that you show by turning it over all the time. But just what's your underlying idea, concept, thesis about this first loss of the 49ers this season?
Well, I thought it was the game where injuries – finally caught up with them as far as costing them a win. And I think that the first play of the game, very well designed play action to the right, and that leaves Kyle Juszczyk wide open to the left, and Brock Purdy almost missed him.
Yep.
I mean, that pass was so low that Juszczyk had to kind of get down and fall to the ground to catch it. He popped back up, and this is how open he was. He popped back up and still gained 18 yards. But my point is that if Brock Purdy's toe wasn't bothering him, which he said it wasn't, I think it still had an effect in that he didn't practice. He didn't play for 2 weeks. He was limited in practice for most of the week. His receivers were limited in practice, were missing from practice, were missing from training camp, were missing from Sunday's game. All of which, you know, you can't keep that going in the NFL. It's going to catch up with you at some point, and I think it did against the Jaguars. I mean, there were some beautiful throws in there. The touchdown at the end was just a really another well-designed, well-blocked screen pass to Tondres, 21 yards. It cut the lead to five with about 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. But then there were other ones where, you know, usually when Purdy missed, he was sailing the ball high. And that's, you know, sometimes you're not following through when that happens. You're throwing off your back foot, your mechanics is screwed up. And you can easily see why his mechanics might be a little bit messy right now, given the fact that he was dealing with that toe injury. He was hesitant to put a lot of pressure on that toe hadn't practiced in full in a long time. The double whammy here is that there's not any time to fix that. They're going to have like a half speed walkthrough practice on Tuesday night. And that's it. That's the only warm up for the Rams game. So You can't build the chemistry. You can't work on your mechanics. You can't do anything. You just have to go. And Purdy has been, you know, to his credit, has been really good in those scenarios in the past. Thursday night games are his bailiwick. But this is going to be a tough order.
Yeah, and it's the Rams. It's a big game. Rams win in a back-and-forth game against Tampa Bay. They're 3-1. 49ers are 3-1. This is going to be a very important divisional game, of which neither you or I will be there, but that's a whole other thing. Yeah, I'll just say what I wrote about was all those things are understood. They're all true. There was going to be a moment when everything wasn't running at top line, when they weren't going to get, you know, make every big play at the end like they'd done in the previous three games to get to 3-0. But it also, to me, kind of circled how important Brock Purdy is to everything. And I just kind of – I thought the reactions and the mood and the George Kittle sitting at, you know, next to Purdy in the locker room afterwards and Spencer Leighton, when it wasn't like a fuck up, buddy. It was like, we're here for you. We're here for you. And McCaffrey, I asked McCaffrey about that and gave me the most, you know, passionate, big picture answers he's ever given. Like, none of us have been on an undefeated team. You're going to lose games. It's just how you get back from it. And I asked him specifically about Purdy. So I assume some of this is a message about how much they believe in Purdy, how much they know he's going to bounce back from, you know, throwing two turnovers and fumbling away another one. Like, this is their guy. And in a season now without Bosa anymore and without Kittle for at least a little while longer, without Ayuk probably for, you know, a lot longer, and they might lose other guys, he's so important. And if he has to stumble like this, they're not going to win a lot of games. And he did. And Jacksonville's not bad. They're not great. Trevor Lawrence, like, even through this, by the way, I was just thinking, I'd still take Purdy over Trevor Lawrence. And you know, the Purdy haters would totally disagree with me, and they're all pouring in on social media now. But you take a look at Trevor Lawrence. You say, do you want that? Or do you want Brock Purdy, who I think we know can be a lot better than this and still made some really nice throws? But it is on him. Like, this season more than ever. But it's also the season when he signed a $265 million contract. It comes after a week one game where he threw turnovers, threw two interceptions. Like, you know, okay, get through it. This is a bumpy time. Have a better game on Thursday night. And then another good game after that, and another good game. And they got, so this is their tough part of this season right now, right? They got the Rams and Tampa Bay. They could be 3-3 and be okay. But if they're 4-1 through this, it's an incredible, incredible success. And I think Brock Purdy is going to be a big part of it. And, you know, that scene of him pounding the grass, I started with that because I thought it was so struck. We've not seen Purdy look like that, right? He's been mad, but he's not laid on the ground and hit, pounded his fists into the grass like he did after sack fumble. I just thought it was like, this is a guy who accepts, wants, and knows he has a responsibility this season more than ever. And it's going to be into the future. Like, this is not, again, this is not the end of the Brock Purdy thing. And I think that's generally a good thing for the 49ers. It was not a great thing today, but that's okay. You get through, they're 3-1. You bank those wins early in order to let one go like this, which they still could have won. Kind of thought they were going to win even at the end. Although that punt return touchdown was mad, dude, like, that was probably the play of the game. And we could talk about the 49ers' great special teams once again, but he's got a lot on him, but he's the right guy. You know, I just think the locker room thinks it's the right guy to have on him, but it is on him. And I think Shanahan's matter of fact commentaries, like, yeah, you know what, four turnovers, but you know what, that's otherwise he made some good, like, he was not snappy, you know, snappy generally, but as coaches tend to be after losses, just like, this is our guy. That's who they're riding with. And they're quite fine with it. Now there's four or five of these games might be a little different. This is just one. I mean, you know, he had the two interceptions in the Seattle game, but he still threw some great passes and won that game in Seattle. This is a little different at home against Jacksonville. But that Jacksonville pass rush is real, Barros, and it got to them. It really, and it's obviously it got to him at the very end, most specifically.
And they were missing Walker for most of the game.
Yep.
You know, a top three draft pick. We need to mention that the Jaguars lost half their team in this game. Was their MetLife Stadium game. They lost a number of players throughout the game, and that's probably one of the reasons the 49ers were able to hang around. But let's go back to your story on Purdy about his passionate reaction to the sack fumble at the end of the game. I didn't concentrate on that, but I seem to recall his answer to your question was that there was an explosive play available to them.
He said maybe. I think he said maybe. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that sort of underscores it. I mean, not only did he get sacked and lose the ball, but they could have had a big play that would have obviously, made the outcome different. What did you think about the first interception, the one to McCaffrey, when the second quarter they're heading down for possibly a score?
Yeah, a little overthrow, as you said, he was a little high, but I didn't think it was kind of into traffic. So you kind of go for, you risk things bouncing around when there's two or three guys around. But I think it's a play that that McCaffrey often makes. I wouldn't say all the time. I don't think it was a drop, but I think it's one that he usually makes or just drops straight down. It was unique that it batted up in the air and there were Jaguars around. So I didn't think maybe the decision to throw it, but again, like Shanahan said, he thought it was going to be a touchdown.
Yeah.
So because it's an improvised play, he's going to run and then he sees McCaffrey breaking free over the middle deep. I mean, he's running straight to the goal line. So I didn't think it was a terrible throw. I didn't think it was a great throw. It's kind of like, those happen. And maybe it's more about the decision than anything else. But again, they've made plays like that, right? He's always going to want to throw it to 23. I don't know. What did you think about that one?
Well, first of all, that's what Shanahan says about his quarterback after every bad game, whether it was Jimmy Garoppolo or Trey Lance or Brock Purdy. He defends the quarterback, and there's always if we had done this, that would have been a touchdown. Remember one of his quotes after the first Super Bowl loss, the Jimmy Garoppolo loss in Miami, was that, I thought Jimmy had a great game. A couple of things go different, and he's the MVP of that game. So that's what Shanahan does. He always defends the quarterback. McCaffrey's quote was interesting. He said that he began to reach for that ball with two hands, realized that he wasn't going to get it with two hands, and then started to reach for it with one hand. I mean, that sort of tells you what you need to know. I mean, his conclusion was, I need to haul that in, but it's a high pass.
Yep.
You can't always be expected to haul it in when you can only get one hand on it. And that was the case a lot today. DeMarcus Robinson, first game with the team, he had a wonderful catch over the middle, but he had to use every centimeter of his body, plus a big hop, in order to get that one. So Purdy was sailing the ball in this game. So like I said, I'm sure it's toe-related in that he just hasn't been practicing. And when he does when he did practice in recent weeks, he had to kind of favor that toe. But I just don't know how quickly you can fix that, especially on a short week. I think that's
going to
be...
Short week going to artificial surface.
Yeah, and perhaps without Ricky Pearsall.
Yep.
Pearsall hurt his knee on what would have been just a circus catch on the sideline, and we were watching him. He went into the tent. He shared the blue tent for a little while with Juwan Jennings. They need to get a double wide blue tent with all the injuries that they have.
Bigger tent.
Maybe the receivers need their own, like the receiver blue tent. So then he went on to an exercise bike. Then he came out and tried to run patterns. Then he was just standing, and then he came back into the game, and then he only lasted one snap and had to come out. I mean, I'm not gonna speculate on what's wrong with him, but it seemed like if a guy can't go in that situation, everything's kind of still warm, you still got your adrenaline, it's going to be hard for him to go on a short week, as you note, on an artificial surface. So that's just another layer of obstacle, obstacle for Brock Purdy and this team heading into Los Angeles.
Let's get to the Saleh, Cohen. Let's skip over it, because that's such an interesting moment. And I was watching it. You were watching it right after.
Yeah. Well, can I give you your plaudits right now?
Okay, go ahead.
So, at the end of a game in this day and age, it used to be that reporters could watch every snap of every game, and you kind of watch the handshake and all that stuff. Nowadays, everyone has to write something and file it just as the game's ending. Tim Kawakami, however,
columnist.
He's also a columnist. He's an old school columnist. So not only does he have the luxury of not having to work really hard during the game, he's also kind of instilled with these traditional tendencies, these traditional values, watching kickers in the pregame, watching the handshake. Tim always watches the handshake, and it's usually a waste of time. But today, TK was the only one in the press box who was watching when that little dust up happened. And you can describe what you saw through your binoculars.
Well, you had the joy of listening to me narrate it. And you're like, what? I'm going, they're going.
I could not find them with my binoculars because I wasn't trained on it.
I'm like, they're going at it. And what I did is I watched Shanahan walk up. It's what I always do to watch Shanahan up. I saw him with Cohen, did not look super warm, but it wasn't terrible. Typical head coach thing. And then I'm kind of just pan over. Like, I wonder what I knew Saleh was walking out more slowly. Like, I wonder what he's doing. And I see him kind of talk to a few players, whatever. And then he can see Cohen because Cohen's walking across him going to where the visiting team tunnel is. And Saleh's walking across. And then clearly Cohen was like bustling right past him, like making it. You could just see Saleh kind of jerk up a little. Okay, whatever. Like it was definitely icy, more than icy. And then like I'm kind of watching, and then I see a player or two kind of like jostling a little bit. I couldn't really tell. I think maybe the video saw it clearer than me because the cameras did see it, right?
Fox, yeah, got it's on it, camera. It's, yeah.
So what I saw was kind of like, well, what's going on? I just see some bodies. I see Saleh moving over, and I see Cohen kind of turn around as he's walking, and I see them gesturing to each other. Now, I did not know what they were doing. It did not look like it was happy gesturing. I'll put it that way. But you never know. It could have been, hey, ha ha, I'm going to get, you know what? But it definitely didn't. And then I see players separating them, like literally 49er player. I forgot who. Yetur Gross-Matos was in there somewhere. Other players, like you could see them, and I could see Jaguars players kind of smiling too. It was like something is going on here, and it was just they didn't get face to face because Cohen was walking away. Saleh's probably 10 feet, 15 feet, and then Cohen turns around, and then the yelling goes on. And then we've since seen Jacksonville cameras have had audio of it, and Cohen's yelling, you know, keep my name out of your mouth. Keep my name out of your mouth. And then you hear at some point, I didn't quite hear it audibly, but someone transcribed it, and I don't doubt it, said, I will fuck you up. I will fuck you up. And that's not great stuff.
Cohen said that to Saleh?
No. Saleh said that to Cohen. Cohen said, keep my name out of your mouth. That's because Saleh had mentioned the sign stealing, sign whatever. It's all legal. It's all legal. I don't know why Saleh said it. I don't get it. And I kind of asked Shanahan about it, and he just kind of said, you know, whatever. And I was trying to clean it up, and I didn't think you should be so sensitive about it, but I don't think he'd like it if someone accused him of that. And I get what you're implying is you're only as good as these numbers because you're sort of cheating, but legal cheating. So I have no problem with Cohen being pissed at him, especially after a win. Like, look, we did this, and you were going to try to denigrate it by saying we're doing something in a skullduggery. The Saleh, I will fuck you up is not great. That's not great. Obviously tempers flare. We know Robert Saleh is being a really good guy. I'm not saying whatever, but that's not cool. And the cameras got it. You're in front of everybody. It sure looked like that to me. That's what I was thinking. There's like stuff again. What I really try not to do is put my interpretation of what I see when I don't hear it, but now we have the audio. And they were ready to go.
Oh yeah.
And when Shanahan was asked about it, you could tell he knew what it was. Like he knew, he wasn't even, he said, I didn't see it, but he knew what was going on there. I don't think it was great. And maybe Liam Cohen was a little sensitive about it, but he had the right to be. And Robert Saleh went out of his way to mention it. I don't know.
I have a theory.
Go ahead.
On what the underlying issue is. Remember when the 49ers were looking for a defensive coordinator in the offseason? And, you know, everybody knew that Robert Saleh was their number one target. Well, we all had to wait, fans, the team, reporters, on this hiring because Saleh really wanted the Jacksonville Jaguars job.
Yeah.
And he was a finalist for that job, and he would have taken that job. He wanted to be a head coach. And Liam Cohen turned it down, didn't want that job. And
why didn't he want it? He didn't want to work for Trent Baalke.
But. And then he accepted it later on.
When Trent Baalke was fired. When Trent Baalke was fired, yeah.
Right. There's always a Trent Baalke connection to everything. But my point is that maybe, I don't know any of this for a fact, I'm speculating, but just the way that that all went down maybe left a bad taste in Robert Saleh's mouth. I mean, I can't figure out why else he would bring up the sign stealing. I'm using air quotes if you're not watching on YouTube during the week. I mean, it just makes no sense because as Shanahan said, everybody does it. And then, you know, ticking off the head coach, getting inside someone's head, you know, means nothing to the game.
Yeah.
All it means is that at the end of the game, someone's going to be pissed off. And
hide your signals. Hide your signals. Yeah. And Dave Lombardi, my colleague, also mentioned that Saleh's last loss as Jets coach was to the Vikings. The Vikings quarterback's coach or whatever came over is now part of the Jaguar staff. So there might be some pointed stuff there, but it's not, you know, it's not illegal. So why do you say it? So what are you trying to do? It also tells me that, I mean, Saleh wants to be head coach again. He wants to play on that field.
Oh, yeah.
These guys. And I'd heard this, and the 49ers know what they wish he was. They wish he was the defensive coordinator forever, but he wants to be a head coach. And I don't know if this is a step towards it. Probably isn't. But, you know, the fieriness, I think people like that. This is about
the defense played well.
Yeah. Defense played well. No Nick Bosa. They didn't get any pressure on Trevor Lawrence, and they still played decently in the back. We could go on to that. Like, they got him. If they're going to want to be a good playoff team, they need to make a move for a pass rusher because Mykal Williams is not going to be that guy. And Bryce Huff was not an impact player in this game. It's one game. That doesn't mean, you know, it's forever, but they clearly are lacking zero hits of Trevor Lawrence, who's not exactly the most elusive quarterback of all time. Now this is going to double. See, you're glad we're recording this, Barros. It's going to double overtime.
We
wouldn't even have started it yet. Here's this tip for young writers around the world. Watch the friggin' end of game handshakes, because you never know what you're going to see. Maybe it started because I started covering Buddy Ryan. That's when I started. And he never did the halftime. But so it was interesting to see how that would maneuver, like what people would do when he didn't do the handshake and how other what that set up. And then Harbaugh, of course, was another reason. And then we had many, many interesting Harbaugh post-game handshakes. So it's just something to watch. Like, you just never know when something really interesting is going to happen. And bang, there it was. And I'm definitely glad. I'm going to write about it, but it was good to note. And this will come up again, right? This will come up again. And I don't think they're going to play the Jaguars anytime soon, but this stuff like this comes up again. Stuff like this comes up again.
Well, it's a lesson to editors, too. don't assign running gamers. They're always.
Oh, by the way, it's a tie game. They don't go to double overtime. My bad. It's a tie game.
Oh,
okay.
It ends in a tie game.
Yeah.
I just wanted that extra Dak Prescott fantasy points for my team.
There you go. So we all care so much. We care so much.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay. So I agree with you. I thought it was obvious that the pass rush was lacking teeth. They're certainly not going to be able to get to the quarterback consistently with four rushers without Nick Bosa. They're going to have to blitz a lot. What do you think their record has to be in order for them to do a trade? They'll be nine games. If they take it right to the trade deadline, there'll be nine games played at that point. Do they need to have a winning record? Do they need to be in the hunt?
Okay, first of all, I know it's not the question, but I'd do it now. I just would. You lose a game like this, you might have won with a big pass rusher. Okay, they're not going to do it. They're going to wait. I understand. I would be very cognizant of the urgency of the moment of every game in the NFL. Okay, that's to the side. I'd say winning record. 4-5 would be tough. You still could get the playoffs 4-5, but I you know, without Bosa and without whoever else you're going to lose, but other teams are losing players too. That's going to happen. But I'd say 4-5 would be probably lower than you want to be, and where they'd feel like we can invest a pick in this. Probably wouldn't be a first round pick, but even a second round pick. Do you want to, you know, do you want to give up what could be a middle second round pick for something, you know, 50th pick, whatever it would be, for what, you know, what to get to have a better shot at being the third wild card?
Yeah.
You know, I would do it still. I mean, I keep saying it. I still would do it. I think seasons are valuable. I think every season you can get in the playoffs is a valuable thing, and you don't know what's going to happen in the tournament, and you don't know what other teams are going to suffer, you know, injuries. If Purdy gets hurt or McCaffrey gets hurt, you know, it's a different equation, but you don't know that. And other teams don't know who's going to get hurt. I'd say 4-5 seems like, you know, below the level where they'd want to give up a second round pick. Or, you know, and if it's Hendrickson, maybe even a first, although maybe you're not giving up a first by that point, right? I would do a first round pick that could get knocked down to the second round if you don't make the playoffs for, you know, what is it, 13 games of Trey Hendrickson. If you're getting to that point, you're only getting 8 games of Trey Hendrickson. They said that there's a cost and benefit of that, but I'd say 5-4. 5-4 would do it. I think you would definitely still want to do it at 5-4. I still would want to do it earlier. I mean, you don't think the Tampa Bay game would be great to have a great pass rusher, right? I mean, it just
no, Mike Evans in that game.
I get the idea that you don't know yet, and you want to spend, and maybe the teams aren't even thinking about talking trading. I think you could talk them into it though. So I'd be on the side of making a move. And you're not making a move to win a Super Bowl. You're making a move to get in a tournament, and getting in the tournament's a big deal. So 5-4, would you do it at 5-4? Or would you back off?
Yeah, I would do it at 5-4, but okay. Let's just say that they do wind up 3-3. They play at the Rams and then at the Bucks after that. Their next three games before the trade deadline would be home versus Atlanta, a primetime game, Sunday night game. Then at Houston, they just thump the Titans. Mm-hmm. And then at New York Giants, which is probably a win, talent versus talent. But it's also MetLife Stadium, so yep. You don't know who you're going to lose in that game. And I just want to point out, everybody who went over the schedule before the season began and said, oh, win, oh, Saints yeah. win, you know, Falcons win. You know, it looks a lot more daunting right now. They've got two home games in a row. They come home and they play a primetime game against the Falcons. Then it's two more road games. And then it's the Rams again. So it's shaping up to look a lot more difficult, well, more daunting than it did back in August.
Yeah, but that's injuries, and you just can't predict injuries. But yeah, that they will happen. It's not like the Falcons, you know, win a game today, and oh my God, they're this team, still the team they got blown out last week. The Texans were winless. Did they win today? I don't even know.
Yeah, they shut out the Titans.
Yeah, I mean,
I think they're going to trade Arden Key to the 49ers.
That's my prediction. What do you give up with the 49ers for Arden Key? Fifth rounder
that, you know, becomes, you know, could be a sixth or sixth rounder that could become a fifth based on performance.
Like, judging by the lack of a pass rush, I was saying, like, I don't know that Arden Key really changes them significantly, but anybody who can get around the edge is going to be, because Mykal Williams is not getting, he was moving inside even without Nick Bosa, because they're putting Yetur Gross-Matos on the outside. Certainly not an around the edge guy either. Bryce Huff is almost solely an around the edge guy, but at least he can do that. He's not a, you know, he's not a bull rusher kind of guy. But
interesting to check out is in those pass rush situations, who are they putting on the edges?
It was Huff
out there.
Yeah, it was Huff, and it was Okawanu at times. It was Mykal Williams a couple times, and then they came off of that, is what it felt like to me. He might have had a few more late in the game, but Yetur Gross-Mato some of the time, but a lot of Okawano, a lot of 91 out there. So, but again, he did not get around the edge. He's not a get around the edge guy. You know, those guys are good. Those guys are very valuable. Let's talk special teams. And an incredibly backbreaking moment on a punt coverage. You should not be giving up big punt returns. Like nobody, the 49ers never get big punt returns, like for years. And they give up a touchdown on a punt. I guess it was a obvious block in the back. I didn't see it. Shanahan went, oh, the clip? You mean the clip?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Was that what you're talking about? The clip?
No one said clipping since 1988.
I know. That happens. If it was a mistake, it was a mistake. We'll talk about another referee mistake. But you still got to be like tackle them at the 40, right? You can't have them go all the way. It's just another example of poor 49ers coverage. This is a team that does not return it well and does not cover it well. And that's like, Barros, that's what, 50 yards a game they're giving up? And of course, more when it's a touchdown. But you're giving up field position every single time that happens. Brutal. Just brutal. I don't know what they do. Did you take a look at it? Who got blocked in the back? And who?
I think it was Sharon Neal. I think it probably was a block in the back. It was sort of on an angle, so I'm sure that's what the officials will say. Well, it was really more the shoulder. I'll get more heavily into it tomorrow when I review the game. But yeah, I mean, that obviously stands out. But almost as much as they score a field goal at the very end of the 49ers score a field goal at the very end of the first half, sort of they had to do something at that point, or else, you know, the Jaguars are just going to run the ball down their throats in the second half. So they at least accomplished that. And then they give up a 54-yard kickoff return, which sets the Jaguars up for an easy field goal to end the half. So your whole drive is for naught at that point. It just underscores the importance of it, you know, and the importance of a kickoff that lands at the one, covering it. And people keep asking, you know, the coordinators change. They sign Sharon Neal and Luke Gifford and all these other guys specifically for special teams. Why can't – what is happening? It doesn't matter who the coordinator is, whether it's Hightower or Schneider or Brent Boyer. This team can't cover kicks. It's bizarre. I mean, the stalwarts on those units are, you know, safeties and linebackers, and the 49ers, you know, draft great ones. I mean, those are two areas where this team isn't weak. And like I said, more to the point, they brought in guys who do that for a living. That's what they're here for, and yet they still can't do it. Amazing. It's a liability every time.
And I don't think it directly cost a game, but like it did last year when it cost a couple games, but it kind of cost a game.
This was like last year. Yeah.
I mean, this is four turnovers, and I, you know, it's a little different, but yeah, it's horrible. It's just horrible when you know it. You know, you could just go. You and I joke about it. Okay, here they're going to go. They're going to give up a kickoff return to the 40, and it's like to the other 40. Brutal stuff. Unbelievable. It must be driving them crazy, but it happens every friggin' week. And for multiple years, something's going wrong. There's a breakdown somewhere. Let's talk about the other one. It was that weird thing before the big Jacksonville touchdown drive in the first half, where it's like second and 15, backed up to the goal, near the goal line. Incomplete pass.
Second 12. Yeah.
I'm sorry. It was a run, something. And then Fortnite stopped them. They could have made it third and 15, right? And it's a penalty on the Jaguars. And if you decline the penalty, it's third and 15. And for some reason or whatever it was, they take the penalty to make it second and 15. So maybe it was third and 12, second and 15.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason why you take that penalty. You want the down. You want the down. You want them to give up the down, run it, and then punt it back to you instead of getting two tries at it. Well, they run it on – they get the second down. They run it. Maybe this makes the whole thing whatever. But then on third down, they make the big play downfield. Shanahan, I don't know. I mean, I saw him talking to the official. I didn't see him make the gesture, but he's talking to the official. And then they mark the penalty off. They announce it. They're getting ready to take the snap. And you see Shanahan running up the official and screaming at him. I knew what it was about because that could be the only thing it was about, that they wanted to decline it. And he's got to call timeout just to stop the play. But then, of course, they tell him, because you took timeout, that's an action that happened, and you can't get it back, even though he said that they apologized to him that they missed it. I don't know how do you miss that, but that turned out to be huge because, they convert the third down, and they go all the way downfield to score a touchdown. Now, defensively, you got to stop it. That's not the referee's fault that you can't stop the drive. But that was bizarre that if you know football, you decline that. At least you really think about declining that penalty. Then you got it. I'm sure he communicated that to the official. I don't know what the hell happened there. That the official just didn't hear it or just ignored it. That was really bizarre.
Yeah, it wasn't a great game for the officials either. I mean, the clip that there was.
I just like, the clip?
Oh, the clip? it's a great way of criticizing them without criticizing them. And then the Upton Stout interception, which was kind of ticky-tacky as well. Those all went against the 49ers. Now, the Jaguars, I think, got penalized 12 times.
Yes, yes.
So they were penalized quite a bit. That plus all the injuries that they suffered really, I think, are what kept the 49ers in the game. But, it was not a clean game. It was an ugly game to watch. And we just watched an overtime game, really fantastic game to watch. The one this morning in Dublin was a fantastic game, a lot of energy. This one was the dud. This is the dud of the weekend. Lots of mistakes, lots of injuries.
Yeah. The question. Is this given the injuries are always going to put them at risk at a lot of different places, but is this the 49ers dud for a while? That's the question. They're going to have a tough time on Thursday night, but I think they're going to play better. They may not win. Playing better might not lead them to win that game because the Rams are the best team they're going to play. This is going to be the toughest game that they're going to have. Not only the short turnaround, but it's just a really good team playing at home. You're on the road. This is going to be a tough one, obviously very well coached team, but is this the 49ers dud, Barrows? You think they play better from here?
I think you usually play better after a loss. And then just get sharpened up. And, Shanahan was asked about a trap game and, everybody said, oh no, not trap. We have so much respect for the Jaguars, but I do think that things caught up to this team, all the things that we kind of were amazed that they were able to withstand over the first 3 weeks, caught up with them. And the fact that you're 3-0, it's just human nature. You're going to relax a little bit. And like I said, I think the toe may not have been a factor per se, but the fact that Brock Purdy was favoring it, the fact that he hadn't thrown a lot in the last 2.5 weeks, I think that made for a choppy game, and that's exactly, and it's understandable. I'm not saying Brock Purdy's terrible. Put in Mac Jones. I'm saying this was inevitable. This was going to happen at some point. Just given all this, and this started in July. This just wave of injuries. Juwan Jennings was out in July. Ricky Pearsall was slow to come back from a hamstring injury in July. This has been building since July. They've gotten lucky, and to their credit, they've been plucky and lucky to go 3-0, but this, you can't keep doing that. It's absurd to think that they could have, and this is the game that it caught up with them. And I think that they understand that. That seemed to be what, Christian McCaffrey was like, everything went wrong today and we just played poorly and, move on. That's the only thing that you can do. By the second half of the season, you would think that Purdy has found, figured out who his top three or four wide receivers are. That's been changing week to week. Quarterback's been changing too. If the Tim Kawakami principle doesn't take effect, which is injuries beget injuries, and they do get healthier, and Ayuk comes back and Pearsall comes back and Juwan Jennings comes back, and DeMarcus Robinson gets
George Kittle.
George Kittle too.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
So, you know, maybe week 12 or whatever it is at this point. And So basically I'm saying there's chemistry that's missing right now. There's plenty of time to get it back, but you need to have everybody out there. That's just the bottom line.
All right, Barros, we record this one late, and thank God we started it right as overtime started, and we didn't have to wait out that long.
Hey, Tim, did you watch any football on Friday night?
I think there was a Cavaliers team that seemed to play very well. They look pretty good. That quarterback, transfer quarterback. I don't know what Virginia's doing, but
he's got a little Brock Purdy in him. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I was talking to Tariq Ahmad. You probably saw me talking to him.
I was walking right behind you. Is that you? Were
yes, down he was on site in Charlottesville for the game. So, expect some Cavaliers on the squad.
Can you imagine everyone to the audience? I say this. Matt Barros, like, lining up who the 49ers are going to draft, spending months and months to try to figure out who your draft crush is from Virginia. Have you ever had a Virginia draft crush, by the way?
Come on. And secondly, I've got integrity.
Exactly. When and if they draft some Virginia players, or even one Virginia players, what the coverage is going to be like. Oh, my God. This is going to be I don't know if I should look forward to that. I don't know if we should all look forward to that. But
yeah, it's
Barros will provide plenty of content. If and when this happens, and leading up to it, there'll be plenty of content about who it's going to be, because you're going to have a list of 15 guys from Virginia. Yeah. Thank God. Way to go. You're going to be Tariq Ahmad's best friend until you screw them up by taking Virginia.
I'm already offering Tariq free advice. I'm basically the assistant general manager.
Yeah, right now. Yeah. It's really good for 49er fans to hear that. I'm sure they're quite
like the Costanza and the Yankees.
Yes. All right, that's plenty enough. It's a 41-minute podcast late at night, but we banged it out post-game. This will probably we're recording this Sunday night. You'll be listening to this on Monday. We'll do another show. We'll squeeze it in there next week, maybe Wednesday, and try to get when there's some sort of idea on who's going to be playing on Thursday. But probably a show from 49ers Plus Minus on Wednesday. All right, that's it, everybody. See you.